Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. I'm Charlie Hurt, filling in for Brian tonight. Coming up tonight on this show, Tom Kersting, Mark Thiessen, and Brian goes inside the chaos and pressure of youth sports. But first, we begin with this, the midterms. I know it seems like they are far away, but 10 months goes by pretty fast, and it's hard to ignore the progressive clues Democrats keep dropping. After expected wins for the party in 2025, states like Virginia and New Jersey, winning governors feel like the party is on the rise. Untouchable, maybe. But those issues they once ran on and won on, like affordability, border security, and lowering electric bills, feel like a thing of the past. Because heading into this year's midterm elections, Democrats are quickly showing their true colors. And we can start with that self-proclaimed centrist Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger herself, already tearing up executive orders from her predecessor on cooperating with ICE.
State and local law enforcement should not be required to divert their limited resources to enforce federal civil immigration laws. It is a responsibility of federal law enforcement. Virginia state and local law enforcement officers must be able to focus on their core responsibilities, investigating crime and community policing.
All while pushing the state into a global warming scheme that will raise energy bills for all Virginians. And she didn't stop there, her administration unleashing a wide-ranging list of new taxes for personal property taxes, to gun taxes, to ammo taxes, to food delivery taxes, to concert taxes, to gym membership taxes, to dog walking and grooming taxes. You can't make this up. And this is not a one-off, because for key races across the country this November, you are seeing more of the same. The progressive push. Abolish ICE is the new defund the police. Open borders, we know how that goes. Green and clean initiatives like aggressive fossil fuel phase-outs, electric vehicles, and wind farms.
Well, first we have to convince that other 30% of California that we need to move forward in abundance with clean energy, because that is our future.
Free public services like transportation, childcare, and health care, all while taxing the wealthy. Does that sound familiar?
I'll freeze the rent for millions of tenants, make buses fast and free, and deliver universal child care. And before you ask, I'll pay for it by taxing the rich.
And, of course, anti-corporation.
We have more concentration of ownership today, a handful of huge corporations controlling the economy.
The list goes on and on. And why would Democrats who are running feel the need to change when they see Democrats already in legislatures pushing the same narrative? Unveiling their left-wing wish list from banning guns to raising taxes, not just on the rich, to thwarting common-sense election security reforms, all while using short shutdown threats to leverage their policies. So, while Democrats are busy rerunning a failed wild agenda playbook, Trump is out there campaigning for Republicans already on the issues that do matter. Affordability, front and center.
Inflation has stopped, incomes are up, prices are down, our economy is roaring, our workers are thriving, and our country is winning again. Thanks to our tax cuts, Millions of Americans will soon receive record-setting tax refunds, an average of more than $1,000. We are entering a period that will be called the Golden Age of America.
With all 435 House seats up and 33 seats in the Senate up for election, will the Democrats be able to capitalize on their 2025 wins, or has Trump already capitalized on their tired, wild agenda? Joining me now, Fox News contributor and former Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz. So good to see you this evening. Thanks for joining us. So, you know, Jason, it's interesting. Abigail Spanberger won running as a moderate in Virginia. And the first thing that she did, she inherited an $8 billion surplus from her Republican predecessor. And the first thing Democrats do in Virginia is they start talking about raising taxes on Virginians.
Yeah, it's just classic Democrats, right? Hey, we're just one good tax increase away from prosperity in our state. I mean, it's absurd. They can't talk about affordability and raising taxes in the same breath. That's just not do it. Dog grooming? You're touching a part of the segment of the population that's not going to stand for that. She certainly didn't ever campaign on that. And look, Donald Trump is right. He's driving the price of prices down. Just look at gasoline. I mean, it's amazing what he's been able to do in really just about 12 months. So that's going to continue. And meanwhile, you got these Democrats talking about this crazy anti-law enforcement. That isn't going to sell either. So they're doing what they always do. They go the same playbook, you know, raise taxes, spend more money and more control and take away your freedoms. I don't think that's a winning formula in this country.
Well, you know, the New York Times declared it the year of the national security mom, with both Abigail Spanberger and Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey running for governor. And then as soon as Mikey Sherrill gets into office, she turns around and decides to go after who? ICE. Watch this.
We are not going to allow any ICE raids to be staged from state properties. And we are also going to be standing up a portal so people can upload all their cell phone videos and alert people. Like, if you see an ICE agent in the street, get your phone out.
Yes.
We
want to
know.
That does not sound like a national security mom to me.
That's doxing. Yeah. That's what that is. That is a way of identifying these people and trying to intimidate them. And you know what? We're about to go into this surge of patriotism like we've never seen. Our 250th anniversary, this country will just ignite around the flag. And these people are going to be out there saying, bring in more illegals. Let's do more for people that are committing crimes. Let's get rid of law enforcement. They can't operate here. In fact, we're going to allow you a portal to upload when they're doing operations. I tell you, I can't believe that's singing in Virginia. It's certainly not going to sing around the country.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that that will actually convert, especially when you look at President Trump managed to win the economy. I mean, win the election last time. Largely on his promise to secure the border. And both of those women ran on tough border security. And to see this change once they get into office, I guess is probably not all that surprising. Want to turn to the economy. So President Trump names Kevin Warsh as Fed chair nominee. And he obviously has gone all in on the economy in his midterm push, touting the new Trump accounts for children born in, to give every child in America a leg up on whether it's buying a house or going to college or any of the big events in life. How big of a deal do you think that is?
It is unbelievable. This hasn't been done before. But you know what? Only Donald Trump could pull this off, because part of what he did is he got some of these mega wealthy people to put their own money into this. That's what's amazing. And if people will manage their own money and the investment that they're going to get, they're going to come out way far ahead. So it was creativity masked, out there with Donald Trump working with some of the richest people in this country so that taxpayers aren't paying for this. These mega, like Michael Dell, thank you. I got to buy a Dell computer. I love guys that will step up and do that side of thing.
Obviously, you know, going into the election, the midterms are always going to be difficult for the party that's in power, and Republicans are in power. They control the House, the Senate, albeit with slim margins, and they control the White House. It all, though, still comes down to the economy. will the economy cooperate for Republicans?
I think with the new Fed chairman, driving down interest rates, I think is paramount. Donald Trump's been talking about that for a long time. You've got the tax bill that fortunately was passed, the one big beautiful bill that'll kick in. You've got energy prices that are now being tamed and under control. The tariffs are paying off in a big way. Manufacturing is coming in by the trillions of dollars. Yeah, I think people are going to look around and say, okay, what's your idea, Democrats? Raising taxes and going after ICE. That's all they got right now.
And I know what a lifelong Nicki Minaj fan you are. So you probably saw this coming. But if you have Nicki Minaj on your side and Republicans are running in the midterms, that's a pretty good ally to have behind you.
I wouldn't want to go against her. I tell you that, Charlie. Nicki Minaj, she's got her own following, and I'm glad they're on the conservative team. I think it's great.
It's the Nicki Minaj primary, and Republicans, led by Donald Trump, managed to win it. Jason, thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you.
Great to see you. Okay, now to this. Then versus now. For years, Democrats insisted the border was under control, until the numbers told a very different story. At this same point in time during President Biden's first term, there were nearly 2 million illegal border crossings. At the southwest border in 2024, there were 1 million arrests at the border. Fast forward to President Trump's second term. In 2025, that number dropped to 110,000 border arrests. That's a 90% drop at the border. Same country, same border. Two very different strategies. A new Fox News poll revealing border security remains Trump's strongest issue with voters. Even Democrats once spoke a different language. Long before today's debate, President Obama said enforcing immigration laws was not just legal, but constitutionally required.
Ultimately, our nation, like all nations, has the right and obligation to control its borders and set laws for residency and citizenship. And no matter how decent they are, no matter their reasons, the 11 million who broke these laws should be held accountable.
So what changed? The policy? The politics? Or the will to enforce the law? Joining me now, national political editor for The Washington Times, Stephen Dynan. So good to have you this evening, Stephen. Thank you for joining me. So, you know, it is really remarkable to step back and look at this moment. You and I have both been covering politics for a long time. I do not ever remember a campaign promise that was made that was more dramatically kept by a president coming into office than Donald Trump's promise to secure the border and then the resulting securing of the border.
Yeah, the numbers you read earlier really tell the story. I'll give you another set of numbers. December 2023, sort of the worst month in border history ever, a quarter of a million illegal immigrants caught by the Border Patrol coming across the southwest border, and probably 75%, say 170,000, 180,000 of those caught and released. During December 2025, the last month just completed, it was about 8,000 people coming across that border. Zero catches and releases. And as you said, right, Trump is doing it under the exact same laws that Biden had with the addition of the Laken Riley Act, but that's more for interior enforcement. So at the border, the exact same laws, entirely just a different focus, a matter of, hey, we're going to maximize these laws and take them and do what we can to stop the border rather than facilitate crossings.
So it's kind of an interesting dynamic that we've seen over the years. Under the Biden administration, you had a surge of ICE agents who are in charge of interior enforcement to the border in order to basically do paperwork and process millions of illegals coming into the country. That was under the Biden administration. And under the Trump administration, you have the reverse, where you have Border Patrol agents who are used to, like, guarding the border, who, because the border is so secure, are now having to come into the interior to carry out deportations. Explain that dynamic.
Yeah, so under the Biden administration, I remember it was actually a fight between the Border Patrol and ICE, the ICE leadership here in Washington. ICE wanted their officers to be on the border to facilitate the catch and releases, get them out of our community so they're not doing the interior enforcement that ICE is supposed to do. They wanted them in Arizona so that they would be the ones to open the van doors and transfer the illegal immigrants from the processing facilities to the bus stations so that they would be the ones who got to do catch and release. Now, as you said, it's the exact reverse. Rather than surging ICE to the border, this administration is surging Border Patrol into the interior to help out ICE do what ICE is supposed to do, which is that interior enforcement mission. Now, you know, certainly there's a lot of criticism for the Biden administration for surging ICE to the border. It may not be the best choice to surge Border Patrol to the interior because they're two different places, and we're seeing that play out in places like Minneapolis right now. But overall, you know, the trend line, the fact that the border is that secure, that you have, they're all immigration officers at the end, that you take those immigration officers, you don't need them at the border anymore, and you can use them in the interior. It's why ICE arrests are up so much. It's why removals, deportations are on pace for a record level, because you have more manpower in the interior looking for those people.
And as Tom Homan said last week during that press conference, deportations are an important deterrence to keep the problem from coming back. You had an interesting story last week talking about the crackdown on illegal immigration has led to a drop in U.S. population growth. How big of a deal is that?
So it's, you know, the reversal. We're still waiting on actual final figures from the Trump administration. The data we got earlier was Census Bureau data that covered July 1st of 2024 to July 1st of 2025. So about half of the year of Biden data in there. But what demographers tell us is that we've seen a spectacular reversal in what had been a sort of record increases in newcomers, foreign newcomers, are now where the out migration, right? Their right. Estimates, the administration estimates that as many as 2 million people, migrants who had been here, have gone, have self-deported. And as you said, you know, that's what Tom Homan says this is all about. You enforce in the interior, you change the calculus so that illegal immigrants, even those who don't have major criminal records, believe that they may be arrested. They're right. Not priorities for arrest, but if they come in contact with them, they may be arrested. Their calculus changes, and apparently 2 million of them have already gone home.
Stephen Dynan, The Washington Times, always appreciate your reporting. Thanks.
My pleasure, Charlie.
Next, what the landmark social media addiction trial means for the future of Meta and YouTube. Keep it right here. Only on One Nation.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
A troubling new report today spells out what all that time on social media is doing to our teenagers.
Children and smartphones. A new study out overnight finding a link between kids who use them at a younger age and worse mental health outcomes when they become adults.
Despite the well-documented mental health risks associated with excessive screen time, American teens can't seem to exist without YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, or Snapchat.
The dangers of social media. Studies over the years showing a staggering mental health crisis among America's youth, anxiety, depression, body image issues, all linked to social media. Tech giants Meta and YouTube now on trial in a landmark case, accused of designing their platforms to be addictive. Opening statements start this week. So what would victory look like? How do we keep our kids safe? Psychotherapist Tom Kersting joins us now with what parents need to know. He's the author of one of the most popular books on the topic, Disconnected: How to Protect Your Kids from the Harmful Effects of Device Dependency. Tom, great to see you. And obviously your book is spectacular and a must read, I think, for all parents. What can parents expect from the results of this trial?
So what I'm hoping for is a big deal, right? Yeah. It kind of, you know, it's being, you know, correlated to the whole tobacco thing many years ago. What we need are safeguards, okay? So what online safeguards go back to about 30 years ago, right? The stuff, that's not even laws. It's just here are some safeguards and they're 30 years old, right? That's before smartphones, before all of the social media. And, you know, I think that's what I'm hoping happens, that some real safeguards come in, because they do.
And the point being that having all of this power in your pocket is different from having it on a laptop, I mean, a desktop that you can't carry around into a school bathroom.
Yeah, so it's like a hypnosis machine, right? Yeah. You get this thing. We could walk outside in the streets right now and get to see everybody with their heads down. And you take a kid whose mind is malleable, that's not even fully developed. Yeah. And a lot of this content, you know, is really, it's designed to be like powerful content, whether it's bad sexual stuff, whether it's, you know, anger, violence, all that stuff. That's the kind of things that kids really don't understand. And they're sort of like when you were a kid, you sneak and look at this and that. And you do things behind your parents' back.
That's kind of the point of being a child.
Yeah. But now you have this device where they have full carte blanche access to the worst things that we would never want our children to have. And we don't have any control of it because big tech has been in control of this for many years.
It leaves nothing to the imagination for a young child.
That's correct.
That imagination is an important part of it. In what ways is social media like tobacco, and in what ways is it not?
So, you know, tobacco, you're smoking a cigarette, dipping, you know, tobacco, whatever. But, you know, this is like digital fentanyl, okay? Yeah. So these products are designed to target the same part of the brain that produces dopamine, a pleasure-seeking part of the brain. So I see stuff at my private practice, Charlie, where parents call me up. They have a 12-year-old that's, you know, has oppositional defiant behavior, punching holes and all. And it's always when the parents take away the digital fentanyl, the device.
I mean, it rewires the brain.
It does. It's called neuroplasticity. And if your brain is engaged in something for 3 hours or more a day that's considered highly stimulating, your brain will adapt to that and unadapt to the real.
You and I know what it's like as an adult.
Yeah.
And our brains are a whole lot less elastic than a child's brain.
We're digital immigrants, and these kids are digital natives.
Yeah. All right. I want to switch to this real quick. A new Pew Research poll shows that 64% of 13 to 17 year olds use chatbots. 3 in 10 use them daily. Why is this such a why should this be of such concern?
All right. So for a child's development, you know, you hear about social emotional learning, right? So emotional intelligence, which is the ability for me and you to do what we're doing right now, having a face-to-face conversation, feeling each other's energy and stuff like that, that is only developed, emotional intelligence, from face-to-face interaction. So we have a kid that is engaging with an artificial, anything artificial, artificial sweetener, artificial coloring, you know, we turn a dirty eyeball to. But now we have artificial intelligence where they are actually having an emotional experience with something that can't reciprocate emotionally. Dangerous. It's going to confuse them. It's going to lead, if it continues, it's going to lead to social anxiety disorders, more than we have right now, no doubt about it. Get the kids out. Get them on the playgrounds. Get them involved in sports. And get them involved in social engagement with other humans.
A child walks up to an adult, and immediately, even a young child, has a sense of whether you can trust the adult. They have spidey senses.
Yeah.
But with a chatbot, there are no spidey senses. Even if you had spidey senses, you can't pick it up.
No way. And even those senses are developed, right? You're not necessarily born with those. It's part of, like, the emotional intelligence, the ability for... I look at my son's graduating college, so I'm looking for jobs for him all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And every one of these jobs is saying they're looking for certain skills that seemed to be just automatic years ago, like, you know, ability to have good teamwork, ability to communicate effectively. Because, you know, this young generation hasn't had enough of that to develop those skills.
You're suddenly a superhero if you can do a firm handshake, look somebody in the eye, and have a conversation.
Exactly.
Tom Kersing, thank you so much. Always so relevant and important, what you have to say.
Yes, thanks.
Okay, the United States in a long game race with China. But younger Americans are starting to feel that China has the edge. We'll explain next, right here, only on One Nation. Did you have to do this? I was thinking
that you could be trusted. Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. President Trump is putting new pressure on Iran to reach a nuclear agreement with the U.S. He says if no deal is reached, the world will, quote, find out if U.S. strikes spark a broader regional war. That is, Trump has been threatening military action against Iran for weeks. It's over the nuclear program and its deadly crackdown on anti-government protesters. And the escalating rhetoric comes as the U.S. continues to build up a major military presence in the region. President Trump, though, says Tehran is seriously negotiating with the U.S., and he hopes military force won't be needed. And Iran's top security officials claim progress is being made on a framework, but it's not exactly clear what is on the table. But Trump says the U.S. has given Iran a deadline to reach a deal. White House envoy Steve Witkoff could meet with senior Iranian officials in Turkey this week. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, back to One Nation.
As President Trump battles for dominance with China, a new survey shows a sharp generational split on America's global power. Nearly one in four young Americans now say China is more powerful than the U.S., twice the share of seniors who were asked the same question. For younger voters, it's less about military might and more about jobs, inflation, and the system they feel isn't working for them. They see China through tech and pop culture, not Cold War threats. Okay, joining me now to discuss, Fox News contributor and Washington Post columnist Mark Thiessen, along with Fix California senior advisor Katie Zachariah. So great to have you both on this evening. So, Mark, how do you explain this generational divide when it comes to China?
Well, first of all, I am absolutely shocked that young people who get their news from the Chinese Communist Party's controlled TikTok have a much more positive view of China than older Americans who don't even know what how to download TikTok onto their phones. It doesn't surprise me at all. And look, I get that young people don't remember the Cold War the way you and I might. Do they remember COVID?
Right.
Because last time I checked, it was the Chinese Communist Party's mishandling of a virus that kicked them out of their schools, put them on online school, locked them out, and unleashed the worst mental health crisis their generation has ever experienced. So I don't quite understand the short-term memory loss that this young generation seems to have.
That's a fantastic point. Katie, do you think that there is an opportunity here for Republicans to actually take advantage of that?
Yes, with the new owner of TikTok and the fact that there will be a new algorithm introduced to the young folks, and really looking at higher ed and the infiltration, in my mind, I lived in China for 3.5 years. I lived in Beijing, and I really have seen an infiltration of the CCP into our higher ed system. So we need to attack that as well. And I think this is a huge opportunity for Republicans because, look, having lived there, I can tell you it is not superior. It is you have squatty potties and you have all kinds of very third world country experiences. And for these students who believe there is superior, yes, the military might is a threat and President Trump is combating that. But to go experience what it's like to live in communism, to live like the people live in China, is so necessary to understand that the American way is the only way, the best way, if you want to thrive, if you want opportunity and capitalism. So the Republicans need to seize this moment.
Welcome to China, where you can't even take your clothes off in the privacy of your hotel room without needing to worry about being monitored. Speaking of the Chinese communists over on CNN, Kevin O'Leary was stunned when Tiffany Cross hits him with a personal attack in a heated brawl over ice. Watch this.
Furthermore, there's a reason why we have not seen a resurgence of the Proud Boys. And that is because I believe a lot of them are likely made ICE officers.
Did you just say ICE officers are militia?
Yes. Have you not been paying attention?
Yeah,
they certainly mirror the
Gestapo.
Bit, yeah. I think that there are white supremacist tattoos on their
white supremacist federal officers.
Yeah, white supremacist federal officers.
Like, where are you going with this? Why would you say
that? I'm going with my eyes, ears, and logic. There have been multiple ICE agents who have white supremacist
tattoos. Men and women working for the federal government.
Yes, and you're a member of a cult, so I don't expect you to have logic.
Whoa.
Katie, I have no words.
No words. And what we all can take away is when there's an ad hominem attack and they are using these. I mean, look, it starts with Waltz. He's calling ICE the Gestapo. It starts with the violent rhetoric we've been hearing for almost a year now from the left, from the top leadership of the left. When you start going down the ad hominem attacks, the left has lost their argument. They have no policy position any longer, so they have to start calling them white supremacists. What he should have said is prove it. Who? Show me. Show me the evidence of the white supremacists, because there aren't any. And if there are, let's see the evidence that this is ICE and that they've become militia. And the Democrats can't stand by that. So they just are going to start name calling and hopefully they'll never get called out, right?
Mark, it's comical to watch that interplay because she's so stupid, but it's also very dangerous.
Yeah, well, I've never heard of Tiffany Cross until this segment, but I have heard of Mike Waltz, who just said that the ICE was like the Nazis who were hunting down Anne Frank. And I've heard of the prosecutor in Philadelphia who said that they compared them to the Nazis and the Gestapo. Just the two last subjects together. When China is good and U.S. law enforcement is the Gestapo, right, we've got a serious problem on the left.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a breakdown there. Okay, I want to switch gears to this. You've got some new airlines are charging passengers or a new policy to talk to a human instead of AI. I understand the importance of, you know, the AI maybe provides some sort of useful things. But Katie, are you going to pay extra to talk to a human instead of a robot about your air travel?
I almost won't use those airlines because I hate speaking to robots and AI so much. I just push zero until I get a human. So I will not use Spirit if they make me pay to talk to a human because I'll never get what I need done with a robot, in my mind.
Yeah, when I get tired of hitting 000, I just start going, person, human, and it still doesn't understand me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know which is worse, AI or some of these foreign call centers.
Right. I mean,
maybe at least AI speaks English properly. I don't know. But most people who are under 70 or 80 use the internet to buy their plane tickets. When I go on a plane, I buy my ticket online. I check in on my phone and download my boarding pass on my phone. I don't check luggage most of the time. So my first interaction with a human being tends to be at the boarding gate.
Yeah.
So that's fine with me, as long as when I have a problem, when my flight is canceled, when there's a weather delay, if I can't reach a person there, then we've got a problem. But overall, I'm fine with handling my own travel.
Yeah, but if you do have that problem, you need the human. Katie.
Agent.
Yeah, exactly.
We all do the same thing.
Katie, Mark, thank you so much. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, coming up next, youth sports are in chaos. Parents are out of control and the costs are skyrocketing. Brian caught up with two experts on how to change the tide. Don't move. More One Nation is next.
You're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on. Get paid.
Get ready to play, huh? I don't want to see any laziness there, okay? If we win this, we're in the finals. If we get a big lead, we got to pummel these guys. We got to pummel them at all costs. Dominate and hammer them. I want you to play dirty if you have to, but don't get caught. Byung-sun, stay low, okay? That's easy for you. Just chop block them in the back of the knee. That'll work well. Ambrose, you're big. Don't be afraid to throw the elbow. If you break someone's collarbone, that's a good thing. That's what the medic's for. Otherwise, he's just sitting around. All right? You hear me?
Funny stuff, right? But it's true in some cases. We're seeing the intensity in youth sports today, sometimes resulting in on-court fights, sometimes on-field fights, leading one to believe that perhaps too many parents are taking this too seriously or have unrealistic ideas about what their kid will become as an athlete, believing from the start their child will go pro, go to the Olympics, go Division I NCAA. But new research suggests that's just a small minority. A study in the Journal of Sport and Social Issues finds most parents are realistic and value sports for more than trophies or contracts. So how do we make sure that sentiment stays widespread? Joining us now to discuss this, the associate professor at the University of Florida who conducted that study, Chris McLeod, along with longtime New York sports personality Brandon Tierney, most recently heard on FAN, now got his own YouTube channel, BT Unleashed. Welcome to both of you guys. First to you, if we can start, Chris, what did you find? Just 17% of those parents believe their kids are going to go pro. I kind of like that number. Were you surprised by it?
Yes, we were surprised by it. We started this study because we were interested in this idea that's been floating around that all parents are delusional about their children's chances of going pro, going to college, getting scholarships. So we used some data from the National Sport and Society Survey, which is run by Chris Canusta, my co-author at The Ohio State University. And we found that most parents do not expect their children to go pro or even go to college.
So in reality, we find out that only 6% of varsity athletes will play in college. We find out that only 2.5% of high school athletes go on to play at the Division I level, let alone the very small percent that will go on to go pro. So, Brandon Tierney, you're out coaching how many sports?
Two, and I'm out there a lot.
All different levels.
Yeah.
So do you find when you deal with parents that they have that realistic expectation?
Thank God the kids I coach, I've got good parents. Thank God.
And teams you play against.
Yeah, for the most part, I think most people comport themselves well. Listen, I think that this is a deeper issue, and I don't necessarily have a solution, but it's easy to identify. College is all out of whack, and the cost to go to college, I think, is really placing the emphasis on the wrong things. I mean, parents are looking at sports as a way to pay for school. It should never be that way. So I think that everybody's, you know, overly emotional. But I also think this, Bri, I really do. Like, now with phones and everything, like, when I was growing up, there were a couple of dads in the stands. Granted, this is the 80s, smoking a few butts, banging back a few beers, yelling things they shouldn't yell. Like, let's not make it seem like all of a sudden the parents got a little wacky. It's amplified now on social media, but it's always been an issue.
So you got 27.3 million kids playing. So when you have 23 million kids playing, why are they doing it if there's not going to be, Mr. McLeod, if there's not going to be a payoff at the end of the rainbow? What do you want kids to get out of it? What do you hope they do?
Well, I think we want children to get character development, growth, learn some things, play with their friends. Ultimately, youth sport should work for the family and for the children, not the other way around. And I think that's what most parents think about when they're getting their kids into sport, and most kids as well. The good thing is that really it's that intrinsic motivation that's going to make your child succeed in the long run, not them trying to chase a professional contract.
I'd like to see a little more balance here. Like, you know, if you have a rough day, you don't need to be in the batting cage at 2 a.m., you know, yelling at your son or your daughter. But it's also okay to compete. Like, let's not get that twisted to the point where, you know, you can't, you know, work hard and chase something with vigor. I think what we've lost is balance and a little bit of perspective here. But
keep division
absolutely,
standings.
Man. Yeah. And by the way, if you don't win, you don't get a trophy. Like, I'm okay with saying that. Like, this notion of, hey, you came in fourth place, here's a ribbon. Hey, you came in fifth place, here's a trophy. No, because that's not preparing people for the real world. Now, to answer the question that you just asked the professor, what should sports really be about? Well, not the economic pursuit and those dreams. It should be about fostering competitive mindsets, right, learning how to deal with adversity, learning how to deal with all different types of ethnicities. And then, by the way, if you're good enough and natural attrition doesn't sort you out by the time you get to high school and beyond, you'll play and you'll be really good. But even if you're not, you're just better equipped to deal with the world.
Right. Just out there, maybe failure, you use this term. Use this term, Chris. Failure in a safe environment could be the best lesson. And you want to say this: support the dream of your kid, but hold the outcome loosely. Fight off any fear of urgency to help your kid own the journey. So how do you do that? How do you support? What's the subtle way to support the kid? Kind of lead him, because you have the life experience, Chris. At the same time, let it be their journey.
Well, I think it's about helping your children understand the time horizon here, right? It doesn't actually matter how well they're performing when they're 10, 12, 15 years old even. If they really want to succeed in sport, what matters is their motivation, their talent, and quite a bit of luck for most sports in their early 20s. So if you can help children understand that, then you can help them understand what the most effective things for making them right, successful in the long run would be when they're young.
Right. And what, Brandon, I find that I couldn't believe the stat. 92% of female CFOs played college sports.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Right.
But
you don't know
really
them as athletes. You know them in business.
Yes. But when you look at their makeup, it's all derived from sports, or maybe not all of it, but a large percentage of that, learning how to pick yourself up. Hey, you just got your teeth kicked in. Say you're a soccer player, you lose 8-2. There's two options. Like, you either learn and you deal with it and you get better, or you accept it. And those who don't accept it, And when I say accept, not that you push back on the results, right. You win or you lose, but do you do something about it? And those who choose to do something about it generally are people who you want running companies.
And finally, Chris, the final thought, what do you want people to take from your study? You looked at the science of sport. For youth sports, what do you want people to take away from your study?
If it's for families, I want them to think about what they're using sport for in their families. And I would encourage parents to think about how would we do sport differently if we thought that our children would have absolutely no chance of going pro or getting a scholarship. And for a lot of families, they'd do exactly the same thing. They love the travel sport lifestyle. But some families, I think, might choose to do something different. And I'd encourage them to think about that a little bit more to make sure that sport is working for their family and what they want.
Great. Check out the BT Unleashed, which is on YouTube.
Yeah, we got to get you on sometime. You going to come on?
I would love that.
Big Giants fan.
And the big question is, of course, how does it pay? Only kidding. Krista McLeod, thanks for doing
this. I'm not even making money on it yet. I got to pay you?
Absolutely. Hey, guys, thanks so much. Great talk. Appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Now your sneak peek at the week ahead. The president also hosting a high-stakes White House meeting with Colombian President Gustavo Petro. A meeting is scheduled in East Palestine, Ohio, to discuss a health study on that 2023 train derailment. There's a Senate hearing on the proposed Netflix-Warner Brothers deal. Opening statements are set to start this week at that landmark social media trial. And, of course, Super Bowl 60 next Sunday, the Seahawks versus the Patriots. That's it for tonight. Brian will be back next week. Please tune in to Fox and Friends next weekend. As always, I'll be there. And catch Brian all week, Monday through Friday, on Fox and Friends starting at 6 a.m., so get up and get dressed. Have a great rest of your night and keep it right here on Fox News.